from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum this morning, David Strathairn is one of Hollywood's most versatile actors, with a breadth of work that ranges from action films like The Bourne Ultimatum to playing the classic newscaster Edward R. Murrow in Good Night and Good Luck. He returns to the stage for a solo show, Under the Lintel, at ACT, the story of a librarian who investigates a book that is 113 years overdue. The San Francisco native joins us in studio after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. San Francisco-born actor David Strathairn joins us for this hour of Forum. Known for his wide range of film work as well as a career in television and the theater, he returns to San Francisco to star in a single-actor production, Underneath the Lintel, which is playing from October 23rd through the 17th of November at the American Conservatory Theater. That's the Geary Theater in San Francisco. And joins us here in studio, and welcome to the program. Delighted to have you here.
Thank you.
I want to take you through your whole career here. We have a pretty ambitious hour ahead with you. It's a lot. And I did see Under the Lintel last night, and I want to talk to you about that. But I thought maybe we talk about the career first. And I was interested in getting a book just this morning about the circus, because you had, well, actually sort of a career in the circus before you went into acting full-time. Although, let me take you back. I think Williams College and John Sayles, even before the circus?
Yeah, that's where I was introduced to theater, was at Williams College, and where John Sayles and I crossed paths. The paths converged a little bit later in, when we started doing some summer theater, and then it Secaucus 7, Return of the Secaucus 7, was our sort of first collaborative effort together.
You've been in every one of his movies, haven't you?
No. Six, I think. And he's made, he's up on about 10 now, I think. Yeah. He's got another one coming out very soon that he, it's called Gopher Girls.
He's also a fine fiction writer, and a lot of people don't
really
know that about Sayles.
Yeah, he's really a great fiction writer.
So there's been a lot of collaboration there, Clown in the Ringling Brothers Theater. But people know your work and certainly know many of the films you were in. Are you the kind of actor that's recognized often on the street, though?
Not really, no. Some people often think, oh, yeah, well, that was were we at that convention together, or not as much as you'd think.
And you had big movies. I mean, The Bourne Ultimatum and Good Night and Good Luck and L.A. Confidential, and I mean, the list just goes on and on.
Yeah, well, those sort of people who are film buffs and have seen those films, which they stand out as films. They'll say, I recognize you from that one or that one, and those who are fans of the Bourne series, they definitely go, oh yeah.
I'm no fan of the last one with Daniel Craig. I thought it was dreadful. It was a lot of car crashes and car chases.
Yeah, a lot of bells and whistles. Yeah. What I thought was missing was the quest. There
was no arc to it. The quest is a good way to put it. You were also in the revival of The Heiress with Jessica Chastain.
Yeah.
On Broadway.
Yeah.
So you've done a lot, and you've done a lot of theater work. Why'd you pick this role, Under the Lintel?
Well, Carrie and Bea was the dramaturg there, and Carrie, obviously, she's the artistic director at ACT, sent it to me, just saying, well, take a look at this. And I was just enthralled by the story, not even thinking, would I want to do this as a one-man piece, having never done a one-man performance. I just loved the story. I thought the writing was great. It was resonant on so many levels. Just basically it was something that you could sit around the fireside and be told and be fascinated with.
I saw the rehearsal last night. I thought you were spectacular. Your performance was I mean, there is so much to that performance, not only in terms of acting and the versatility of your acting that came through in so many different ways, but moving around and climbing ladders and drawing and dancing and singing. I mean, this is a pretty demanding role.
Well, we've sort of expanded the physicality of the production of the play. And Glenn initially wrote it in his sort of prologue to the play.
It's Glenn Berger.
Glenn Berger, the author, yeah, saying that this is probably intended for a room full of maybe 12, 15 people who probably just wanted to get off the street and get out of the rain to hear some odd little lecture about some unknown journey. So putting it in the Geary, which is a beautiful palace, you know, really, it's a sort of a cathedral of theater when you think about it, and the history attached to that space. We felt it's quite a challenge to fill that space with just one man talking about these little pieces of evidence that come out of a suitcase.
Well, this is about a Dutch librarian who discovers a book has been returned that's 134 years overdue.
Yeah.
Big fine. It's got some charm to it, and the play has been performed. It's a solo play all over the world, really, particularly in English-speaking world. But it got a lot of people ticked off, both Jews and Christians. It's about the wandering Jew, really.
That's at the heart of it, yeah. He believes he's found the wandering Jew, or he's on the trail of the wandering Jew. It doesn't have, it doesn't hit you overhead with, any religious implications. It's much more of a spiritual journey. But I can see how it might cause some controversy.
An obsessive journey, I would call it.
Yeah, it is a bit of an obsessive journey, yeah.
But it certainly kept the audience last night enthralled. And there's still – this was just a rehearsal, so you still got some kinks you're working out, I presume.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of rough edges, mostly how to handle the physicality of it, because it's a lot to it's a lot of flesh to sort of put on the bone of the story if you have a man running around the stage sort of enacting or reenacting the moments of discovery. But I think the space requires that.
Well, as I said, I thought your performance was really extraordinary. Let's talk about some of your performances overall, since we've got you here in studio and you've been dragooned into this hour. This is early film of yours, 1992, Sneakers. Some people may remember you played a blind computer hacker who solves mysteries with your co-stars Robert Redford, Dan Aykroyd, and River Phoenix. And in this scene, Robert Redford is describing how he was thrown into a trunk and kidnapped, and you use your highly tuned auditory senses to retrace his steps. Here's a clip of you talking, and Redford speaks first.
They threw me in a trunk, drove around in circles. It could be 100 miles away. It could be next door. It could be underground. It could be in a skyrise. Forget it.
Fish, what did it sound like?
What?
The road. When you were in the trunk, what did the road sound like?
Oh, I don't know. Highway, a regular highway.
Well, did you go over any speed bumps? Gravel? How about a bridge?
Bridge? Yeah. Four bridges in the Bay Area.
Was the Golden Gate fogged in last night?
Yes.
Did you hear a foghorn?
No. Scratch the Golden Gate. That leaves three.
What did it sound like? Did you go through a tunnel in the middle?
I'm not... No. Scratch the bay.
Well, that leaves two. San Mateo and Dumbarton.
What did it sound like?
There was a recurring sound. But further apart. Yeah.
A little nostalgia there for David. Now, when you do, by the way, it was Jeremy Renner, not Daniel Craig, in that last dreadful Bourne movie. How did I really feel about it? But when you do a part like that, I mean, are you doing kind of what they call character acting? You feeling yourself as being blind?
Well, I wore some very dark glasses, and when we were doing the scenes, I'd keep my eyes closed. because it does affect the physicality. If you walk around with your eyes closed, you hold your head differently, I find. You can feel it internally, and also from, you know, watch it from the outside in. So I think it was apropos to do that.
So how important is what traditionally is called method acting to you, or Stanislavski?
I don't know. Quite frankly, I haven't had any first-hand experience with the methodology. It all feels like some kind of method, but, you know, there's a lot of ways to peel the onion, and every actor's got his own methodology. Whatever gets you there, I think.
And you've worked with Robert Redford. I mean, he also directed Good Night and Good Luck, didn't he?
Oh, that was George Clooney.
Oh, that was Clooney, that's right. But you've worked with Redford in a number of things?
No, just in Sneakers.
Because he's got a new movie out, too. You also were in L.A. Confidential, and that was with Russell Crowe. You played a number of different roles, including in this one, a pimp. Here's an exchange between you and Russell Crowe, with him playing an officer investigating why one of your character's prostitutes was beaten up. Here's the clip.
You're a known associate of a woman killed in a mass murder. You want to go downtown and discuss this officially?
Is that what this is? Official? Somehow I have the feeling this is more personal with you, Mr. White. All right, then. Are you concerned about criminal matters peripheral to the Night Owl murders?
Not at the moment.
Then you wouldn't feel obligated to report them.
Why were Leffert's eyes black?
I needed a Rita Hayworth to fill out my little studio.
A little studio?
Well, there's Gardner, Russell, Monroe, Turner. Lynn Bracken is my Veronica Lake. I use girls that look like movie stars. Sometimes I employ a plastic surgeon. When the work had been done, that's when you saw us.
That's why her mother couldn't ID her. Jesus Christ.
No, Mr. White, Pierce Morehouse Patchett.
How do you what goes on inside of you when you hear just a clip like that?
I just remember the moment where we were outside on the driveway of this beautiful house. I think it was a Philip Neutra house in Los Angeles. I remember the setting, just about everything about it. I was holding a golf club, and
did you feel like a pimp?
Well. The clothes were nice. I couldn't really. No, I didn't feel like a pimp. I felt like a guy who had a very successful business, and I was being kind of put up against the wall by this investigator guy who needed to be put in the clear.
And you're working on that with Curtis Hanson.
Curtis Hanson. Yeah.
How was that?
That was great because I'd worked with Curtis in the River Wilds, too. It was the first time I met him. And he was generous enough to call me at the 11th hour and see if I wanted to do this Pierce Patchett thing. And I thought he was out of his mind, you know, for me to, you know, play this kind of part. And he said, no, you'd be perfect for it. And, do you have a mustache at the moment? And I said, actually, I do. He said, perfect. You'd be perfect. Just keep it, you know.
You like playing heavies? I mean, you did in The Bourne and stuff, too.
It kind of gets down to what's thrown at your feet. So you tend to get pigeonholed. All right, you can play heavy here, and then people see it. Well, there's another one in this one. Maybe that old cliche or adage that you're only known for what you did last. So it's a toss up whether you want to change it up. Try to be as various as possible. But being heavies, you have to think, it's part of the catalyst. It's an important part. Like in Dolores Claiborne, the film that actually the opera was here at San Francisco last month, which I thought was a really quite extraordinary production, quite brave and innovative. The character in that, Joe St. George, was he was a loathsome person. And essentially, he was a catalyst for the story that Kathy Bates carried, really majestically. So you sort of sign off, okay, people are going to think, this is who he is, and, come what may.
Do you like playing Edward R. Murrow, though, more than playing heavies?
Yeah, playing Edward R. Murrow was Well, it was more than enjoyable. It was a pretty extraordinary experience to research that man and his time and what he meant in terms of broadcast journalism.
Still a hero to most broadcast journalists, including myself.
Yeah, he was an extraordinary person.
And in fact, his son, I guess, was on the set, so you had some contact with.
Yeah, I met Casey and even his grandchildren, and that was very special.
You've been somewhat of a political activist. You got involved in a New York presidential campaign, and you spoke out against the Keystone Pipeline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I worked with NRDC, I was that was doing the voiceover for the. For Obama's, the convention was, I didn't know what it was, and we weren't supposed to know what it was. It just was some voiceover thing. We thought it was going to be some little, sort of peripheral little thing for the campaign. And when we were in the sound studio, the guy who was recording it was saying, what is this? What's this? This looks like. Yeah, we both had no idea what it was going to be because they were all on the QT. They didn't want it to get out. And then we eventually found out that this was going to be at the convention. And it was like, oh, my goodness. Wow.
Well, I thought maybe we could hear David Strathairn as Edward R. Murrow. He was nominated for an Oscar for that portrayal in Good Night and Good Luck. And we're going to play one of the more recognizable clips from the film where Murrow is speaking out against the chaos surrounding McCarthyism and about freedom of speech.
We must not confuse dissent with disloyalty. We must remember always that accusation is not proof and that conviction depends upon evidence and due process of law. We will not walk in fear one of another. We will not be driven by fear into an age of unreason if we dig deep in our history and our doctrine and remember that we are not descended from fearful men, not from men who feared to write, to associate, to speak, and to defend the causes that were for the moment unpopular. This is no time for men who oppose Senator McCarthy's methods to keep silent, or for those who approve. We can deny our heritage and our history, but we cannot escape responsibility for the results. We proclaim ourselves, indeed as we are, the defenders of freedom wherever it continues to exist in the world, but we cannot defend freedom abroad by deserting it at home. The actions of the junior senator from Wisconsin have caused alarm and dismay amongst our allies abroad and given considerable comfort to our enemies. And whose fault is that? Not really his. He didn't create this situation of fear. He merely exploited it, and rather successfully. Cassius was right. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. Good night, and good luck.
The most famous speeches of that whole era, and you had it.
That was extraordinary, yeah. That's a pretty prescient and apropos little few words there, yeah.
And how'd you like working with Clooney?
George, it was such a, it was a delight. It was, it felt easy, even though I was, it was intimidated daily trying to, bring this man to life. But George knew just what everyone needed, from crew to cast, to make the experience a fun one, and something that was we all knew that we were making a really pretty important film, and a film that was dear to his own heart because he was doing it for his for his father, who was a broadcast journalist in Cincinnati, an anchorman, and. On many, many levels, George was so on top of it, ahead of the game. It felt like it almost felt effortless.
Did you feel the importance that you were talking about in doing this film when you were doing Lincoln under Spielberg?
Yes, yes. That's another one where you're holding these moments in history for examination in the present, and the responsibility to bring them as fully armed and realized to the now, that responsibility was hung in the air every day, and so it was something that galvanized everybody and gave them a real impetus and an inspiration and an excitement.
There's a lot of excitement for you, and I heard you talking about this, about just all the makeup and the costumes and the changing syntax. And I mean, it was a whole entering a whole world, really, wasn't it? You playing Seward.
Yes, it was. It was. And that was another, like, as in Good Night and Good Luck, the world was created with such deft and precision and, you know, respect to detail and also acting with one of the high priests of
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Was really quite extraordinary.
Well, let's hear. Actually, we've got a clip from that. This is you and Daniel Day-Lewis, who's playing Abraham Lincoln, in conversation with Secretary of State William Seward, played by our guest, David Strathairn.
We'll win the war soon. It's inevitable, isn't it?
Well, it ain't won yet.
You'll begin your second term with semi-divine stature. Imagine the possibilities peace will bring. Why tarnish your invaluable luster with a battle in the House? It's a rat's nest in there. It's the same gang of talentless hicks and hacks who rejected the amendment 10 months ago. We'll lose.
I like our chances now.
That's kind of magical. You remember all your lines from, like, that movie or from, say, Howl, where you played Allen Ginsberg?
No, I don't, actually. No. Maybe I have some dear friends who do remember almost everything they did on stage or in film, but mine tend to sort of atrophy.
You go down to the next project.
And drift away. I guess there must be a little, you know, a plate somewhere, some synapses say, well, we better clean this out. Here comes a new set.
It seems to some people quite a formidable task, though. I mean, especially, well, Under the Lintel, you know, it's just you and all those lines. You're up there for roughly about, an hour and a half.
I mean, it was about an hour and a half last night.
I mean, the memorization seems staggering.
Yeah, but Glenn has written it so that each little section is triggered by a physical piece of evidence, which leads into the next and into the next. The slides, the music, the props that come out of the suitcase. They're all cumulative in a way that they're like little signposts and dots on the map throughout. And I find that it's. Once you get on the downslope of this play, it's kind of relentless, and the writing is it does that. It's really beautifully crafted.
And you've worked with Cary Perloff before. In fact, even going back to The Birthday Party
we did The Birthday Party, Pinter's Birthday Party, which is I think close to one of my top five plays of all time.
I teach Pinter, you know that.
I mean,
we did a whole event at ACT around the homecoming, but you've worked with her in other things as well.
The Tempest, which was the reopening of the Geary, and then last year in Scorched, which was Wajdi Muwad's extraordinary piece about those brother and sister trying to find their mother.
Yeah, we saw it. In fact, a program on it. And now we're doing a program with David Strathairn, and there's an opportunity for you to talk to him. In fact, let me invite you to join this conversation with any questions or comments you might have. Toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your call, so feel free to call us. 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And from silver screen to stage, the multiple faces of actor David Strathairn, now starring in Under the Lintel, Underneath the Lintel, produced by ACT. Academy Award-winning actor here with us for the hour. Join us. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're spending the hour with San Francisco native David Strathairn, who, by the way, was nominated for an Academy Award for Good Night and Good Luck. He would have liked to have probably received it and maybe have deserved it, but I gave him the award when I went into the break there and said Academy Award winner. That day will come, probably. Now playing in Underneath the Lintel, which runs from October 23rd to November 17th at ACT's Geary Theater. And if you'd like to talk with him, you have an opportunity to do that either by phone. You can join us now toll-free at 866-733-6786, or go to our Facebook page or to our website, kqed.org, or you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum. Let me go to some of these emails and website postings that are coming in. Eric writes, what a fine actor. What I admire about Mr. Strathairn is that he is often the highlight of the movie, whether he has a small role, as in The Firm, or a large role, The Bourne Ultimatum, in which he really chewed up the scenery. I've always wanted to ask him, though, was he satisfied with the ending of the 1999 John Sayles film Limbo?
Great question, yes. I have to sort of quote John or paraphrase John and say, the ending fit the title.
That's a good diplomatic response. Here's Robert from Toronto who writes, how do you find a balance between big blockbuster roles like Bourne or your upcoming role in the Godzilla remake and the smaller films like Goodnight and Good Luck or Lincoln? Sometimes actors will have different philosophies about that. Other times they'll rely on the tried and true, fell in love with the character, size of the film didn't matter, cliches.
The cliches are actually the truth. For me, it's the story and what that character contributes to the story, how he fits into it, what's the the particular piece of the puzzle that is his responsibility, the character's responsibility. You know, the big blockbusters, I consider Lincoln a blockbuster,
yeah.
You know, and Good Night and Good Luck, too, that busted a lot of blocks, too.
I think what they're talking about maybe are films that just seem like they're overtly commercial or
right.
Don't have the kind of heft and gravitas that films like Lincoln and Goodnight, Good Luck. In fact, I'm getting a lot of emails about Godzilla. Jason writes, Strathairn has this old-school American look that really works well in a lot of period pieces. I'm wondering what was appealing to him about the film Godzilla.
Jason, I feel that after I saw the original, I was hoping that this, reincarnation or this reiteration of the story or the continuation of the Godzilla's career would be respectful of the original film Gojira, which I found...
That's the Japanese original.
Yeah, it was the 1954 original. And an extraordinary film. The compassion, the human story in that was what it was really. If you haven't seen it, and this is to whoever's listening, it's revisit that film. It's not a big blockbuster monster movie because the bells and whistles and all the little props and things are kind of rudimentary. But what's at the heart of that story of that film is pretty important. And so here's Godzilla again talking about how we deal with our natural environment, in this case, nuclear waste and everything that comes with that. And Godzilla is in our, film psyche and also in many ways our sort of nation's psyche. It has to do with... our responsibilities in the world, to the world, to the earth, and
it's an environmental film. Really.
It is an environmental,
an ecological film. Yeah.
Yeah,
in fact, the listener says, "Is the new Godzilla movie going to really be different? And if so, how? The buzz is it's going to be awesome."
The buzz will probably be awesome. It obviously will be different because of the bells and whistles that are available to, technically speaking. With the computer-generated stuff. But I think and I hope that the sort of the soul of the original is still there.
You see a lot of movies, huh?
Mike, I don't see that many.
You see a lot of theater then or more?
I probably see
about the
same. Yeah, and usually I'll go to something if someone says you should see this or if it's by Pinter, I'll go see it.
We share that. Lee from Palo Alto asks, what happened to Alphas? And you were Dr. Lee Rosen, right? I mean, that was like Oliver Sacks-inspired stuff.
Indeed, yeah. Then and that was another one, which that project I thought really had a great vision. Zach Penn, who came up with the idea of exploring these anomalies which actually exist in the world, and the people are marginalized because of them, and bring them into a team under the auspices of a doctor like Oliver Sacks, who. He's a brilliant man and has brought all these, neurological eccentricities to the fore. And I thought, This will be fun, and I think there will be an audience for it. And there indeed was, and still
is. A sci-fi audience, though.
A sci-fi audience, yeah.
That's a wonderful description, by the way, neurological eccentricity.
Yeah.
Listener writes, this is kind of a broad and open question, but it seems like you've always been politically involved. At least your filmography certainly hints at it. What are your thoughts about where politics is going these days?
Oh, goodness. That's that's probably for another 2 or 3 hour show that we don't have time for. But not that I could lend.
You're going to filibuster? You could.
You could filibuster, yeah. Well, just that thing alone we should talk about. Where is politics going these days? I don't know. Doing this play, Tracking Down the Wandering Jew, which is either a myth or a reality, just popped into my head that following politics is like you have a bunch of evidences, but you never know what they're going to end up being. It's a pretty slippery slope these days.
And another listener asks, since you've worked with Spielberg, what do you think about his comments from the spring about the industry turning inside out and ticket prices soaring for blockbusters?
I didn't read them directly or hear them firsthand, sort of heard of them. But it is unfortunate that the prices to go see these films have rocketed, and it's because of production costs and everything that comes with putting a movie together. Marketing being one of the major contributors to the how much it costs to go see something. I don't know. I think it might turn around. It may have just reached a critical mass, and it may turn around. But there is a hope that because of how much product there is out there being made, that the distributors and those who show the films will find a new way to get all the product out to people in a reasonable and affordable fashion.
Chris, I think because of the economics of the industry, Spielberg also said that Lincoln came very close to being an HBO movie.
Yeah, I learned that somewhere. I'm not sure when, but I was surprised. Yeah.
Just a couple more emails, and we'll go to your calls. Elaine writes, your guest gave a wonderful performance in the film Passion Fish. He really nailed that regional character beautifully. One of his cameo performances generated a phrase that's part of our family communications to this day. Mm-mm, good, from Home for the Holidays, referring to spiked eggnog. The way he delivers that line is just memorable. You still got it in you? You want to do it? I'm good. Or?
I don't know how I did it, but I remember it was a fun moment. That was.
Here's Gretchen from Oakland who says, I so love your performance in Return of the Secaucus 7 and have made a point of seeing movies that feature you beginning from the 1970s to now, from the goofball in Secaucus to Edward R. Murrow. Thank you, and thank you, John Sayles, for introducing you and Chris Cooper to so many of us.
Well, thank you.
And let me get a caller on, and that's Rick. Good morning.
Hello. One of the major influences I tend to that touches me is men who play, men of honor, and Mr. Strathairn, you tend to do that very well. But early on, with an experience with you, was the movie Mate One. I believe you were in that.
Yep,
that was a sales movie. Yeah.
Yeah, and for a while, boy, I walked around feeling like, man, I am not living my life correctly. That role just blew me away. I mean, it was small, but it was wonderful, and I thank you for it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for the call. And let me get Christina, who I think wants to talk about John Sayles. Christina, hi.
Yeah, hi. First of all, this is a pleasure talking to both of you. And Mr. Strathairn has gotten me into ACT when you were in The Tempest.
Mm-hmm.
That got me into watching live theater. I was not raised on live theater.
Oh, great.
And I went to go see you, and it was so much fun. And I saw you in Scorched last year, and I've got my ticket for Underneath the Lentil.
Great.
But anyway, first of all, I wanted to comment the last email that you read about the length of your career and all these wonderful roles. Thank you for all that, because it's been so much fun watching what you appear in. And are you going to be appearing in any more John Sayles movies?
I don't know. But thank you for your kind comments. I hope to be in another John Sayles movie as long as he makes them. I think he's really a special filmmaker, and he, in many ways, he's a chronicler of our sociology, sort of an anthropologist of the experience of the common man. And so, it's always great to be in his films. But to answer your question, I have no idea.
Thank you for the call. One of my first interviews, actually, John Sayles, goes back to pre-lab, maybe almost the Stone Age, but that was... we've talked a little bit about the action movies, and I thought maybe we'd hear a clip from The Bourne Ultimatum. You're playing CIA Deputy Director Noah Vazin, and you're trying to figure out where Jason Bourne, who's played by Matt Damon, is hiding and trying to stop his next move, and he calls you unexpectedly.
Noah Vazin.
This is Jason Bourne.
I was wondering when you were going to make this call.
How did you get this number? You didn't actually think I was coming to Tudor City, did you?
No, I guess not. But if it's me you want to talk to, perhaps we can arrange a meet.
Where are you now?
I'm sitting in my office.
I doubt that.
And why would you doubt that?
If you were in your office right now, we'd be having this conversation face to face.
some great writing.
Yeah.
Tony Gilroy, this was great writing.
Listener asks, I was surprised to hear that David Strathairn is from San Francisco. Does he still live here? Either way, what changes in the city has he observed, and what are his favorite parts about San Francisco?
Oh, God. I've been living back east for a little more than half my life. San Francisco is a jewel. It's a gem of a place. It's probably one of the specialties, not only of the West Coast, but of the U.S. And by dint of all the people you see on the street from foreign countries, it's a favorite place, and it's a favorite place of mine because it's held on to itself. Its particular aesthetic. Yes, it's grown extraordinarily since I was here as a child, but it feels to me like it's grown with integrity.
So why do you stay in the East?
Well, you put your roots down, and sometimes they're hard to uproot, but, things can change.
Well, I'm glad to have you back in town. And Jerry from San Francisco writes, I didn't realize how precisely Strathairn captured Murrow's voice and cadences until you played that clip. How do you go about capturing the vocal qualities of Murrow?
Well, I was fortunate to have the kinescopes, which are the films. And his broadcasts are there in the... library of radio and television for anyone to listen to. And so it was a matter of listening and trying to replicate it.
Here's Neil. Neil, join us. You're on Forum. Good morning.
Yeah, what part got away from you? What did you really want to do and didn't get the chance to do?
Which part?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Don't know. Can't come up with one.
Something you had your heart set on, maybe, that you would have loved to have had to have played a single role, I think he's asking. No,
I've been really fortunate. The ones that have come my way actually have come my way, and that couldn't be luckier than that. But there's no one out there that feels just out of reach. Not yet.
Okay.
thanks, Neil. And here's Nancy from Berkeley. Hi, Nancy.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Mr. Strathairn, I really have enjoyed seeing you in the movies, and I really feel that you have not been given enough acclaim for your acting. I think you're a wonderful actor.
Yeah, that's very nice of you.
I'm going to be seeing you on Saturday afternoon, so I'm really excited about it.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoy. Thank you, Nancy, for the call. And also, we're in the movie Howl. I thought maybe we'd hear this clip. David Strathairn plays Ralph McIntosh. He's prosecuting the beat poet Allen Ginsberg in court, and this is a scene in which you're reading part of the poem.
You understand what angel-headed hipsters burning for the ancient heavenly connection to the starry dynamo in the machinery of night means?
Sir, you can't translate poetry into prose. That's why it is poetry.
But what are angel-headed hipsters?
There's a question I want our listeners to mull over and ruminate on. What are angel-headed hipsters?
Poor Ralph McIntosh. He didn't know what he had gotten into in prosecuting Allen Ginsberg. I think that probably just, he retired very soon after that. I don't know.
That movie just never really did the box office it was hoped for, though.
Unfortunately, yeah, because it was a really wonderfully constructed film. It had this this sort of a graphic cartoon in the midst of it, depicting the poem, and that it had some reenactment, the part of what I was a part of in the courtroom, and then it had a kind of semi-documentary flavor to it. So it was a compilation of all these different kinds of styles. And at the heart of it is this extraordinary poem and this seminal moment in...
Seminal's a good word for this poem.
Alan probably would love that.
It's still a shocking poem. I mean, after all these years, we think we're so shockproof, but you read that poem and it still jars one. Kevin writes, great to hear David Strathairn discuss his excellent acting, especially in one of my favorite movies, Sneakers. Please ask Mr. Strathairn about his wonderfully enigmatic role in The Days and Nights of Molly Dodd.
Kevin, yes, Moss, the bookstore guy. I have to tip my hat to the writers on that show, and to Jay Tarsis, and who is the director, sort of he was the bowsprit of that production, and for creating an eccentric oddity like that, and many of the characters, and Blair Brown's character Molly Dodd, indeed was a New York eccentricity, really. And I've just felt that show had a wonderful tone. And playing Moss was, it was a hoot. I just loved that guy's kind of turn of mind.
What other characters have you loved?
Most of them.
Yeah.
I mean, although the guy in Dolores Claiborne was, it was hard to
love.
Hard to live with that guy. Definitely hard to love.
Does it seep into your everyday life when you live with characters like that, that you love, or for that matter, that you're hard to love?
Well, with the play, you're with them a lot more intently depending on the size of the role, than you are in a film. I find myself keeping them sort of there on the plate, with them, warmed up, ready to go while the project is going on, because I find that they reveal themselves surprisingly at times if you just sort of keep mulling the character about.
In fact, a listener named Pete, after saying bravo David Strathairn, says, could you comment on the dishonorable Eddie, that's from Eight Men Out, compared to Edward R. Murrow?
Eddie Seacott, what a sad end of a great baseball career. Everything I read about Eddie was that he took the money for his children. He wanted his daughters to have an education, and he also felt that Comiskey had pulled a fast one on him. And so there may have been a little bit of retribution there, but it was a slippery time. But Eddie was, I think he was a very honorable guy. Can't say he was honorable if he, threw a couple games.
This is the Black Sox series.
But his, I don't think he had the same motivations as like Chick Gandel and Risberg and those guys did.
Whitney writes, I love David's work in the show Alphas and was sad to see the show end. I saw him in the San Francisco airport right after I finished watching the entire show on Netflix, which added some excitement to my long day of traveling.
Well, thank you.
Listener asks, what does Mr. Strathairn think about trying to launch an acting career from the Bay Area? Is there enough opportunity here, or is a move to New York or L.A. inevitable?
Good question. Depends on what you want to do. There's an ample amount of theater here, ACT, and the Magic, Berkeley Rep, and Cal Shakes, and I know I'm not mentioning all, forgive me, but it's a wide open terrain, and I think it depends on what you want to do. Los Angeles has its own particularities, and as does New York, and yet there is extraordinary work and really rewarding work being done in the regional theaters. Try it all if you have the opportunity.
Talking with one of Hollywood's most versatile actors, David Strathairn, breadth of work that ranges from playing classic newscaster Edward R. Murrow in Good Night and Good Luck to action films, and he's in a solo show called Underneath the Lintel at ACT, which I want to mention again is the story of a librarian who investigates a book that's 113 years overdue. And let me go to another one of your calls. Connie, hi, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about the movie The River Wild. There was so much physicality in that movie. I wondered to know how much Mr. Strathairn, how many stunts he did on his own. It was an amazing movie, and I love all your performances. Thank you.
Thank you, Connie. I did all of my stunt work. I fell into the water, and I didn't do one. I'll take that back. I didn't do one falling off the cliff at the nighttime scene, and Kevin Bacon was trying to pick me off from the river, but swam across the river, you know, ran with the dog, swam with the dog, got licked in the face by the dog. Curtis and the second unit people were very supportive and also, generous, say, okay, go ahead. If you want to do it, do it. And it was wonderful. It was a lot of fun.
Well, you're still a little over a decade younger than Robert Redford, but he just did this All Is Lost film and apparently did all this stuff himself. His son-in-law, Eric Schlosser, was telling me this and
I was
reading it.
Yeah.
Where do you get to the point where, I guess you know inwardly maybe, it's time to stop with the stunts?
Yeah, you do. You know inwardly. Your body will tell you. Your mind might say, oh, no, I can do that. But no, the body will tell you.
Here, listen to your body, and we'll listen to Josh next, who's our next caller. Hi, Josh.
Hi. Hi, Michael. I just wanted to say that your role in Steel Toes, where you played a Jewish lawyer defending, I think it was a neo-Nazi or a white supremacist, was very compelling. And I was wondering if you could say anything about that from your experience.
I'd like to thank you, Michael, for bringing that up. That's one of...
That's Josh.
I'm sorry, Josh. Yeah, that Steel Toes, which originally was called or is called Cherry Docs, the Doc Martin footwear that is sort of the or was or is a desired footwear of supremacist Aryan groups, whatever, skinheads. The play written by David Gow, a Canadian playwright, is that the film respectfully took the play and displayed it, and I think it's really an important, wonderful, moving, compassionate, and insightful play, and it's been done all over the world in many, many languages, fortunately. But investigating that situation, which is based in fact, in some incidences in Toronto, Canada, was quite daunting. And to realize that this man did this pro bono work and went up against an ideology that would rather have him wiped off the face of the earth, and he did it because of his belief that there is resilience and redemption available.
Well, also a belief in free speech.
And a belief in free speech.
You do a lot of research for the roles you play, don't you?
I think it's important, especially if they're historical characters. It's on our shoulders to respect their legacy.
And you're going to be doing Under the Neath the Lintel until November 17th. Any plans after that?
No, not at this moment. No? Yeah,
it's a different playing a lead role than playing a supporting actor. I mean, do you prefer it?
Yeah, I feel like I'm supporting myself out there all the time, although the play is supporting the whole thing. But it's a fun romp. I think it has a lot of stuff in it. It's a great little ghost story. It's a scavenger hunt. It's a spiritual journey.
And, it's a slideshow too.
And it's a slideshow with music and dancing.
Yeah, I was reading, actually, you know, like you, I'm inclined to do a lot of research, reading about Glenn Berger, the playwright, who loves klezmer music. And I won't give anything away here, but there is some klezmer music as well.
Well, he says that he was inspired to write the play, excuse me, listening to klezmer music. That led him to the whole construct, and not entirely, but one of the main motivations came from listening to klezmer.
But that whole idea of the Wandering Jew has been used in pogroms, it's been used, you know, passion play and all kinds of anti-Semitic, because he was supposedly unkind to Jesus, and that was why he became the Wandering Jew.
Yep, yep.
Well, good luck in this performance. So good to have you here.
Thank you, Michael. It's a privilege being here, having been here. Thanks.
And glad to have you back in San Francisco. The new play, Underneath the Lintel, runs October 23rd to November 17th at ACT's Geary Theater. It stars David Strathairn. And we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Tomorrow, during this hour, we're going to talk with actually a real up-and-coming playwright, Lauren Gunderson, and we're also going to meet Joyce Maynard, who has a new novel out. Hope you will join us for that. First hour, we'll give you an opportunity to let us know what you're experiencing with the BART strike. And remind you that you can always let us know what you think by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or continuing any conversations we have on our website, kqed.org/forum. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our producers are Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.